It's funky. I like that.
Thank you, yes. Yeah, that's a fun card.
Where does the music come from?
There's a small chip-in speaker set that goes into the back of the card.
Was it a CD?
No, it's more like a chip-in speaker set that we... it's very small, and it's about the size of your thumbnail, and we just put it right inside the back of the card.
Like headphones?
No, this is a computer chip that's devoted really to one function only, the playing of the song when we open the card, and then I guess you could say its second function is turning off at this point.
Like a Walkman?
No, it's not like a Walkman at all.
TBTL!
Okay, stop. I feel like I'm watching regional theater, you guys. God, am I in the Cleveland Playhouse or something?
Let me ask you something. Why would a review make the point of saying someone's not a genius? You think I'm especially not a genius?
And for our viewing pleasure, mm-hmm. I pack terms of E.
Oh, love it.
Then we're going to bring it up with a little fried greens to the tea.
Ugh.
And then hope floats with Sandy B.
Yes.
Does somebody so die
good.
In that one?
They die in all of them.
This is making me sad, and I hate being sad.
Hey, everybody stand by. Here we go again.
Hear that, Rude Dog? Here we go again. It's time, everyone, for a Wednesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Get ready for a few laughs and some great information.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Mimi!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Got the pod dog here and the Bay Kitty wandering around somewhere. I don't know. Do they make cat sunglasses? Do they make sunglasses for kittens?
A cat is an angel that poops in a box.
We've talked a lot about the Bay Kitty and how she's cross-eyed, and yet she still seems to be okay at catching things. Although, I'll tell you what, we've now gone through a whole season, or at least spring into summer, and there have been no fatalities around Burbank Springs, which is pretty cool. Fatalities of rabbits or rats or things like that. But she comes out in the yard a lot of times, and she'll just be meowing. She's like 2 feet away from me, and she's meowing, and I can see her squinting into the sun. And I just think, God, if we could get you some kitty Ray-Bans. So that's $1 million idea, possibly $1 billion idea that I'm just throwing out there for anybody who wants to develop it. This is probably a $1,000 idea. It's episode 2,681 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Lots to talk about, including an update on a story we brought you earlier in the week about Sacha Baron Cohen's new television show, where he apparently duped Dick Cheney into signing what was presented to Dick Cheney as a waterboarding kit. And we're like, how are Dick Cheney's handlers allowing him to be interviewed by Sacha Baron Cohen? And now, Sarah Palin...
I'm in it to win it!
...says she was also duped by Sacha Baron Cohen, and we have a little more information about the character that he has apparently been playing to get these interviews, so we'll talk about that. Also, Starbucks has announced it is eliminating straws.
This song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
And the city of Seattle just became the first major city to get rid of plastic straws. Interesting story today in the New York Times about the challenges of, frankly, what plastic straws and one-use plastic things are doing to our world, and then also I thought, well, why don't they just make everything compostable? But there's a downside to that, too. So we'll get into all of that. Plus, emails and V-mails and a World Cup update, because I know that's why people turn to this show. They turn to this show to hear important sports updates like this call from the recent World Cup game.
Rakitic. Kramaric. Perisic.
That is what happens every time Croatia had the ball, because every player has a last name ending in itch. Like, there's one guy on the Croatian team whose last name does not end in itch. So things just start to take on a crazy quality. Kind of.
Rakitic. Kramaric. Perisic.
So anyway, we'll talk about that too, maybe. I don't know. We got to say hi to this guy first, though. The longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their splendor. It's too early for him to get a fish sandwich or even a fish sandwich. But he might have tacos for dinner tonight. But that's not all he's going to have. He's Andrew.
I can eat a hot dog pretty quickly, but that's just out of gluttony and enjoyment.
Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my friend.
Hi, Luke. I don't know if I like this new trend of using my own voice to introduce me, but I guess, you
new
know,
trend.
I guess I don't have tons of agency over that. I will say I'm disappointed right at the top of the show. Nothing personal, but according to the show sheet you sent me,
peace and love.
I was all excited. I thought we had a special sexy episode of the show today because it said that Starbucks is going strapless. And I was like, ooh, explicit. And then I realized later it
why
was
in the world would autocorrect?
Ooh.
I guess strawless is not a word, and so autocorrect was struggling.
I guess.
That's interesting. I guess my autocorrect is a little sexier than I
it
expected
is.
It to be.
Oh, like explicit.
Sexy
toothbrush. Yeah. Anyway, how you doing?
I'm great, man. I'm doing really well. Thank you for letting me push the show back a little bit to start time. I got my jog in. It's been a while because of the sort of my back, which, by the way, is feeling a lot better. Thank you very much.
Good.
What I realized was it's that I wasn't sleeping very well because it was kind of uncomfortable. And so then the whole day I was then feeling not great during the daytime. Last night I slept pretty well. Like a lot, I was able to sleep in a variety of positions, including strapless. I got a better night's sleep, which meant I'm feeling better today. I got my jog on. I feel like that really oriented my brain, my heart, and my soul. So I'm feeling good. I watched the World Cup game that was happening today, Croatia against England. Unfortunately, football is not coming home to England. And peace and love to our and condolences to our English listeners. We probably have more listeners in England than we do in Croatia. So really, if we're just playing the numbers, Andrew, we should have been rooting for England the whole way. I know this is a bummer day for our listeners in England. So I'm really sorry. It's probably like losing the Super Bowl times 20 because it only happens every so many years. But it was a very exciting game. But as you heard that tape that I played, at some point it became hilarious. And this is just the one that I caught. Like this is just the one that I happened to be rolling some audio on. There were other ones where the guy would list, you know, like 9 itch names in a row because
Rakitic, Kramaric, Perisic, Pivaric, Modric threw a boot at it.
That's him actually calling the game. Like, that's not him, like, reading the roster. It's every time the ball would get passed from one player to the other, he would say the player's last name.
It's not completely unlike growing up in the Cleveland area.
Yes.
Like, it did not occur to me until I was, like, dating Genevieve long after I'd left the Cleveland area and talking about my childhood and my friend Lenny Samosky and David Smilak, and I'm trying to think who else.
But it's not just that these people have Eastern European
sure.
last names. It's that they all literally sound – they literally end in the same ending.
Sure.
And that
yeah,
was
– I get it.
I was amazed that the – of course, if you are from Croatia, these are just last names, and they are not confusing at all. But I was impressed that the announcer was able to keep everybody straight and have total fluidity over the situation because he was a British-sounding guy. And the Croatian last names were they were flying fast and furious. Now I'm excited because remember I said the other day that I was kind of rooting for Croatia because of our friend Anita and her folks and the fact that I didn't officiate a wedding, but I signed off on a wedding in Croatia, which I feel like makes me almost a naturalized Croatian.
You mean you didn't protest during the ceremony?
I didn't protest. I didn't. I forever held my peace, Andrew,
wow.
up until this moment. Kevin and Anita, it's a mistake.
Don't
no,
do it.
But I mean, it's – I do have some affection for Croatia, and so I was rooting for them. They won, which is kind of amazing. It's the first time they've ever been in the finals. So now me and DFTB have a date on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock to first of all, open the basement door, which I don't know if you can tell. It's very rusty right now. And then watch the World Cup. I'm actually excited. Like, I feel like I have – I mean, of course, the Mariners – each Mariners game – fills me with excitement up until the point when Mike Leake starts pitching.
Mm-hmm.
God bless him. Maybe he'll get it back together. But anyway, I'm excited to have this like sporting event on Sunday at 8 a.m. to look forward to. How sad is my life?
I don't think it's sad. I don't think that you're the only person in the world who is excited about a World Cup game this weekend. In fact, I would say you're strongly in the mainstream there.
I guess what I mean is how sad is my life is that I am I'm fortunate enough to live in a beautiful city with lots of trails and natural beauty. I have a wonderful wife, a great dog, a questionable cat. I'm very blessed to have this life. And the thing that's making me happy is that I can watch some people I don't know kick a soccer ball around Sunday morning at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. That's what I'm looking forward to, not spending quality time with the people I love. I mean, to a degree, I'm looking forward to spending time with DFTB, but I'm just saying it's sad that I'm looking forward to it, but it's sad that it's probably now has moved up to being the highlight of my week.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that also raises questions about football season as well. Almost everybody in my life is, with the exception of you and DTFB, is kind of easing out of football a little bit. I mean, last year is kind of the same. I'm thinking mostly of Genevieve and our friend Nick Jarin. These are two people who were not casual watchers with me back in the day. They were very obsessed watchers. In fact, Genevieve more than me when it came to like kind of watching the rest of the league and playing fantasy football and all of that. And it's those guys. I think our friend Hannah, who's on the show a lot, she's kind of the same way this year. Like, not saying that they're banning football from their lives, but definitely not prioritizing it in any way. Not like circling it on the calendar and building their days around it. And I still intend to do that, but it is something that, like, you know, there's a certain momentum when everybody is doing it versus you are trying to do it and go against the grain.
Well, as I think David Roth, the great Deadspin writer, said, I think it was him, who'd have thunk liberals were going to get football in the divorce?
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like watching football is now a way, it's now a protest against the president. Like, you drive out to Carrie's parents' house, and there's this...
That's my wife.
There's like some kind of heavy equipment rental place. I think what it actually do is they rent out trailers and stuff. And it's just one of those. It's just one of those places, Andrew. It's got all kinds of. Let me just say, if I need to rent any heavy equipment and/or trailers, not going to be from this place. They've had a big reader board out forever that just says "Be a Patriot, boycott the NFL."
Mm.
And so now it's like, I mean, the funny part is, the NFL is sort of a terrible organization and is probably boycottable. But now that guy who runs, and I assume it's a guy who runs that heavy equipment place, now that I know he wants it boycotted, I'm going to watch every mother effing game.
Just hope
show that dude.
Hope that Michael Bennett says something.
Yeah. We were trying to get Michael Bennett on Livewire. I knew it was kind of a long shot and didn't come together, but that would have been sort of fun. Although, you know what? And this is not the time for sports talk, but... I kind of think Michael Bennett's an interesting character because I think Michael Bennett's probably kind of annoying. I mean, I appreciate the fact that he takes a stand for what he believes in and probably costs himself money and some fandom. And he's been really done wrong in certain cases, like that whole thing down in Texas where they tried to say he had pushed somebody down to get to the field. I think there's been some crap lobbed his way. But I also think he sounds like a very annoying person. Like, as we often say on the show, two things can be true.
Sure, yeah.
But that's not what we were planning on talking about on this Wednesday. What were we planning on talking about on this Wednesday? How's your Wednesday going?
It's going well. I'm like knee deep in instruction manual creation here. I was telling you before the show.
You don't get that reference, do you?
What reference?
Knee deep in the hoopla.
No, I don't know what that is.
That's from Starship, We Built This City.
Oh, that's a lyric.
Yeah, knee deep in the hoopla. I made that joke to you before the show because you said you're knee deep in putting together this. Let's see here.
It's an album by Starship. I didn't know that.
I believe it's also
it's their debut album.
Do they say it? Did I just imagine that? Is it in We Built This City on Rockin'? I believe he says, knee deep in the hoopla.
I believe it because this is the album. I'm on Wikipedia. This is the album that says that, you know, this is their debut album by Starship. This is the successor band to Jefferson Starship. And then it does contain their big hit, We Built This City.
Now, I when I went to YouTube yesterday, YouTube was not doing me right. I was coming up Snake Eyes, and I had not played Snake Eyes, unfortunately, so it was bad.
No.
But I got Snake Eyes when it came to baby faces. I only think of you on two occasions. But so once again, I roll the dice on YouTube. There is something listed as Starship Knee Deep in the Hoopla commercial circa 1985. Do we dare play this? I think this might be a TV commercial for the album? I don't know. Take a listen.
Starship, their new album is taking over America city by city.
Sorry about that clicking.
The clicking is terrible, but aside from that, I love this.
Yeah, okay, just everybody, sum out the clicking in your own head, please.
We built this city, plus 8 more songs that feature Starship's rock and roll.
Oh, shit, dude. Okay, we got to find a clean version of this commercial,
yeah.
Because what just happened in the commercial, cities were flashing when they said we built this city, including Seattle. And then there's a guy who's painted to look like the Lincoln Monument. But then he stands up and starts singing along with the song. So you think you're looking at the actual...
Sounds
the
terrifying.
Lincoln Memorial, the Lincoln Monument. It was a little... and then he gets up and starts singing.
Album Knee Deep in the Hoopla on RCA Records.
Ooh, this guy says Hoopla. I mean, I guess it is H-O-O-P-L-A.
I'm sorry, I don't get the distinction.
I thought it was Hoopla. Knee Deep in the Hoopla. And this guy said Knee Deep in the Hoopla.
The Hoopla on our...
Hoopla instead of Hoopla. Hoopla or Hoopla.
I feel like there's a lot coming at you pretty fast here. The fact that Knee Deep in the Hoopla is a thing. I mean, you're just processing that now.
Well,
if you play
verse one, I mean, it looks like this lyric comes in really early in the song.
Can
so
you,
if you
from,
just
a,
do
from
that,
there, do you want to give it a shot?
Oh, sure. Let me get that going. I was on a lyrics page here.
Okay. Well, I can get it too. It'll only take me a moment here.
Got it.
That person needed to really adjust the tracking on their VCR.
Ooh, that sound. I think that's something about digitizing, because I've heard that.
That glitching?
Yeah, and when you watch old commercials sometimes.
Now, do you.
Okay, here we go.
I'm asking the wrong person. I'm wondering. I think they say Hoopla on this recording, because I've always heard it as Hoopla. Let's find out. This song is such a jam. Say you don't care who goes to that kind of place. Knee deep in the hoopla.
There you go.
Hoopla. Hoopla.
It's a small distinction. I'm not a hoopla versus hoopla. Like, it's a very...
I don't know. I've been saying hoopla my whole life. This is rocking my world. Now, I'm the one who needs a minute. Hold on.
Whoop-diddy-scoopla. Okay, whoop-diddy-scoopla. There must be a mashup there. I see
city scoop whoop.
Somebody has created a pie chart, and the title is Material Used to Build the City, and one half is designated in blue, and that's rock, and the other half is orange. And it's exactly 50-50, it looks like. So it's not like 75-25.
That looks like
75-30.
If it hasn't happened, I'm 100% sure that's a McSweeney's list John Moe has written. I'm 1,000% sure that McSweeney's list exists.
And it
about
will soon
the city being built on rock and roll.
And soon the radio listeners, the public radio listeners of Boston, Massachusetts, will be able to hear that kind of humor in their ear holes.
Yeah. Oh my God! I watched this documentary last night. I was just like. Well, I was just about to say, do you ever do this? But then I was like, yes, this is exactly what you do. You're about to go to bed. You're like, okay, time to go to bed. Then you start watching something. You get engrossed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look up and you're like, dang, it's later than I thought. Let's take a break. And then I want to tell you, if I can, about this documentary about John McAfee, the computer security guy. You know, McAfee antivirus.
Mm-hmm. The guy's crazy.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. It's quite something. Anyway, but we got to do a quick break. When we come back, we'd get about maybe shin deep in the hoopla and then see kind of how it feels and then wade in a little deeper if it feels right. So that's going to happen in a moment. Stay with us. It's TBTL.
Mm-hmm.
Every song during this era was legally required to have soulful harmonica at some point.
Is that what that is? Or is that, I think that's a keyboard, isn't it?
Oh. Is it a keyboard on harmonica function?
It might be. Like, you set your Casio to harmonica.
I don't mean to step on this. I love this song.
I haven't heard this in so long. This is track two, man. Track one, we built this city.
Come on.
Track two, Sarah.
Storms like the wind in your eyes? Storms operate in your eyes?
Storms are brewing in your eyes, I think.
Storms are brewing in your eyes.
I think that's what I heard. This it reminds me, you know, I used to have a... You know, I wonder if there's any girl in my class
love
that
you, like
didn't
no
have some
ever
sort
love
of
you
a...
before, oh, Sarah. Sorry, keep going. I'm just going to sing along quietly in the background.
Because I was going to say, I had a crush on a girl named Sarah. I'm blanking on her last name when I was a very little girl. I remember when I was a very little
Hoopla?
Boy. And I was, hearing this song reminds me of being in the basement, puttering around my dad's workbench, listening to 8-tracks. Now, I don't know if he had this on an 8-track or if this was just like on the radio a lot then and I was using it as a receiver. But I remember being in the basement, like thinking about Sarah, listening to this song. But also, like, now that I think of it, like, I don't know, were there any girls in my class I didn't have a crush on at some point, like growing up? Probably not.
Everybody who, any song that came out that had one of their names in it was going to kind of become your jam.
Yeah, I mean, I get because there was
like
Mandy,
in this case, it
too,
was Sarah.
Right? What was that? Because I definitely had a crush on Mandy. Mandy Cook, I think. Amanda Cook. I hope she doesn't listen because that would be embarrassing. What if she finds out now that I had a crush on her?
What about, I mean, and what's that going to mean for you and Genevieve? Honestly?
That's true, too. Was it Barry Manilow who did Mandy? Is this the song I'm thinking of here? Wasn't there another Mandy, though, too? This is off of Barry Manilow 2, by the way. I would love to be so iconic that you just released. It's just like your name and the number 2.
My life, raining down as cold as ice. Shadows of a man, a face through a window, crying in the night. The night goes into morning, just another day.
Where are you on this?
What's fun? I like this. I mean, I know this song a little bit. I don't know it as well as, like, Starship Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
But I was aware of this song. What's funny to me is to think about you, and the same goes for me, by the way, with a lot of, like, Richard Marx songs or other songs that are emotionally intense, as just, like, an 11-year-old just being like, yeah. I've lived it. I've felt it. I know exactly what's going on. It's like this song is written for, like, alcoholic divorced dads
right.
who are just, like, trying to pick up the pieces of their broken life. And it's like us as sixth graders are like, yeah, man, it's mass true.
Someday I will be a broken, divorced dad, and this song will even mean more to me then. That's probably what I was thinking.
Yeah. Everything's coming up Milhouse.
Yeah.
Move into the bachelor arms.
Yeah.
Like Milhouse's dad. What was Milhouse's dad's name?
Can't recall.
All right. Before the break, I said I wanted to tell you about this documentary. I think most people probably... If you follow the news at all, you remember the news about this guy, John McAfee, who his name was on practically every PC that was released for a while because he started this antivirus security company. He was one of the first folks doing that, kind of cornered the market, but then eventually moved to Belize, sold the company or got bought out of the company, moved to Belize. And he got back in the news because the Belizean government was trying to find him because they suspected him of orchestrating the murder of his neighbor or maybe killing his neighbor himself because he was just like kind of gun nut, just kind of – he really was going sort of Colonel Kurtz, Heart of Darkness down there. And this documentary I was watching on Netflix last night, I was trying to find this. The documentary I want to see is called Dirtbag, story of Fred Becky, who's kind of like credited as being one of the first – like a dirtbag is a term that folks who like just live for climbing, whether it's rock climbing, mountain climbing, all they just have like a sleeping bag and their climbing gear and they'll just pretty much like live anywhere, a van, crash at someone's house, camp out, like everything in their life revolves around climbing. Those guys are kind of – those folks, because there are women obviously too. They're called dirtbags, or they – it's kind of an affectionate title. This guy Fred Becky, who just died recently, he was like the original dirtbag. He's from around here. So I've been trying to see that doc for a minute. I found out last night it's actually not on Netflix. It's only on iTunes, so I will soon be watching it there. But while I was on Netflix looking for it, I saw this John McAfee one. And I guess what I didn't realize was basically the how clear the evidence is. I think it's the woman's named Nanette. I'm going to say Nanette Burstyn, but that's a guess on her last name, the filmmaker who made the documentary. According to her documentary, which I don't have any reason not to believe it, the evidence is overwhelming that he orchestrated the killing of his neighbor in Belize and also had someone else killed. Not he didn't want them to get killed. Maybe he wanted them to be tortured, but they died. Jeez. From the injuries. Somebody who had broken into his house in Belize. He had this kind of paramilitary force that he had created. He just had a bunch of money, and Belize is a pretty poor place. And so he just sort of went around retaining all of the like local gang members and like the sketchiest dudes and gave them high-powered weaponry and made them his like weird quasi-military in Belize. And it was a pretty weird scene. And then he basically just like – what's crazy about it to me is that he's clearly violated the law, clearly you know, been responsible for the murder of one person and the accidental death of another person, which I guess is technically murder if you're trying to hurt them and they die in the process. And then he gets to Guatemala. He fakes a heart attack because they're about to deport him back to Belize. He fakes a heart attack until the hour of 3 o'clock on a particular day. His attorney's like, I can't file this thing until 3 o'clock. Between now and 3 o'clock, they could deport you to Belize. So he fakes a heart attack until 3 o'clock. And then they're like – it's like – it's just so weird that someone's so obviously playing the system. Because then at 3 o'clock exactly, he's like, yeah, my heart's better now. You can take me back to jail. And then the Guatemalan government is like, look, we don't want to keep him here while he fights extradition for 15 years. So we're just sending you back to the U.S. Well, they deport him back to the U.S. The U.S. doesn't really care what happened in Belize. He then runs for president where he lost the libertarian nomination barely to Gary Johnson last time.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. So not only is he like back in the U.S., not only is he not facing any charges, not only is he – but he's now like a cryptocurrency dude. I went to his Twitter page. He has almost 1 million Twitter followers. He's just like living his life. He's just like, you know, just like presumably making a bunch of money. People are embracing him. Like nobody cares that he like had two people killed. It's wow. Crazy to me.
And I'm sorry, what part of the country is he living in?
I'm not actually sure. They're not clear about it. The movie actually opens with him being arrested by police in the U.S., and he looks pretty bedraggled. He looks pretty drugged out. But it doesn't exactly say where he's living. You get the sense it's somewhere in the South now.
Mm.
It was – like I said, I had heard – you know, I'd sort of seen some of the stories and been mildly – because Vice magazine was actually the first people that tracked him down in Belize, and they were the only cameras around for a lot of this weird period of time where he was like – I mean, he basically like – was being smuggled around Belize and then gets in a boat and is taken to Guatemala and is dropped off like on the beach in Guatemala.
Mm.
Like no, you know, papers, no, it just like wanders into Guatemala. But it's just weird because it's like he's basically played the system now and it's apparently worked out for him. Like you expect at the end of the movie, I don't want to give anything away, but you expect at the end of the movie that he's like, it's going to be like, and now he's in jail. And it's like, no, now he's just a rich dude, just chilling, totally, completely untouched by any of this. It's very weird.
That is strange. And wasn't Vice criticized because were they just approaching him as objective filmmakers, or was Vice kind of partnering with him or something? Am I making this up? Does that ring a bell?
I don't remember what the feed or the pushback on Vice might have been about their journalism. Mm. I can tell you that part of how they figured out where he was, and this I remember from the time it happened, the Vice people posted a photo, like probably taken on an iPhone or something, of John McAfee and the reporter. And didn't realize that there was sort of a cache of information associated with the photo, like that you could basically go in and look at the data in the photo of where.
Sure.
So that's how they figured out he was in Guatemala, because nobody knew where he was. And then Vice is like, we are with John McAfee. And they post a photo. We're like, we're not allowed to say where we are. And then everyone's like, yeah, but you can just look at the data on the photo. You're in Guatemala.
Dude. Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
So that was kind of ironic that this guy who's like Mr. I mean, what's crazy to me, too. I mean, he's clearly a very intelligent person. I mean, he seems like a maniac, but he also is very intelligent because he's come back and somehow just like jumped right into Bitcoin land and is like all I was expecting. So I did a news search on his name today to see like how many people are talking about how crazy it is that this guy is like not in trouble. And all the stories were just about him taking on the Royal Bank of India over India not accepting Bitcoin. Like everyone apparently has moved on except for this filmmaker and now me because I just saw the film last night.
And the film is it's like a little bit old, right? It's not brand new, a couple years or so.
Yeah, no, it's from a few years ago.
Yeah, huh. I know that feeling that you get done with a documentary and then you're like, well, what's the rest of the story? As a certain podcaster might say.
Yeah. So anyway. I don't have a power out for that, but and I've given you many of the broad strokes, but it's still definitely worth checking out. It's a pretty interesting documentary. I guess here's what I'm saying. I don't think we've heard the last of his legal trouble. I don't mean for that. I mean a guy like this is probably going to do something else at some point. And if he does it in America, I don't think he's going to be able to skate as easily.
Mm-hmm.
Although the U.S. justice system, unfortunately, is quite lenient on people with money, but. Because like I'm looking at his Twitter feed and part of the whole thing is he's a very paranoid individual and has been pretty much his whole life. And, you know, is always kind of surrounding himself with these armed people. And I'm looking at his Twitter feed. And like I said, it's him like yelling, him being mad about cryptocurrency stuff. I don't really understand. And this, that, and the other. And then there's his email. He goes, I'm looking for two Army Rangers to live with me. Must be single. And then it's his email. They give you an email.
That's just sitting on Twitter right now?
It's on his Twitter feed. Oh. And in fact, he put the wrong email down. So then the next tweet is, this is the correct email. If you want to reach me, if you're an Army Ranger and you're single and you want to live with John McAfee and protect him, this is the email to get in touch with him. I was tempted to email him, see how far I get in the process.
Yeah.
I was going to start by emailing him RWBUR audition tape and just see if we can at least get to the short list.
So you think the single thing, first of all, you might be breaking.
Isn't that a weird detail?
Might be breaking some employment rules there. Although I'm not sure how much that applies to a gig like this. But I assume that's because he's looking for security detail and he just doesn't want any complications.
I guess. I mean, I'd be totally guessing at what the single part of it is. It's probably that. I mean, here's the thing. He's been a person who's surrounding themselves with security detail since who knows when. I don't think it's that he doesn't have one currently. He must think it's not good enough. He must have decided in his crazy brain that he needs Army Rangers. He claims he was poisoned recently. The guy is just, it goes on and on. You scroll down the Twitter feed or you scroll down the news feed and you see that like he was in a hospital. He says in a coma for a few days recently, somewhere in the South. And when he woke up, he said it was because somebody basically tried to poison him. And then he shows this like crazy note he wrote on a dry erase board telling them to like the doctors to let him out of the hospital. They were like, you know, you've been in a coma for 3 days. You should probably stay here. And he writes this note to the effect of in like weird handwriting on this dry erase board. The message is, you let me out of this hospital right now or I'll rain holy hell down on you. Mm-hmm. Do you know who I am?
Oh,
literally,
God.
It's like, do you know who I am?
Wow.
And he posts it. He's very proud of himself. He posts it like, look at this baller move I pulled. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, you got yourself like you didn't want to release you from the hospital because you had been in a coma for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But.
Wow. Anyway, yeah. So that's, you know what I was doing while you were doing that? I was watching dumb. Yeah, it's not dumb, but I found myself like, I guess I felt dumb doing it because I had no idea why I got sucked into this. But there's a documentary on Netflix, this new Ken Burns documentary. It's probably not even new about the Civil War. Did you know that Ken Burns made a documentary? It's just like last year, I think, about the Civil War.
What song did they use for it?
About the Vietnam War. When did Ken Burns release
this? That's been out
thing?
For a while.
Has it? Like years and years now? I didn't know that, huh?
Not years and years. No, not years and years. But it's really, really, really good.
You've seen it, huh?
I have seen most of it. It's long. It's like 18 hours.
Oh, it came out just last year. I don't know why. Usually I'm pretty aware when his shit comes out. But it really – he's trying a slightly different style at the beginning, and it really sucked me in by like – I don't know if you remember the opening sequence, but starting with kind of the later images that you're used to with the Vietnam War and the end of the Vietnam War. as it was, and then kind of doing this like literal rewind thing over top of some music, and then like kind of sucking you back in time to the starting point, which goes back, you know, to the roots of World War II. And it really, I think I watched, I don't know if I finished the first episode, but I probably watched at least an hour of it or something. It's really good. I don't usually consider myself a huge Burns head.
Well, that's the thing. As I'm, if you're my age and you were born after the Vietnam War, you've heard about, I guess if you're my age and also if you're not someone who is a huge history buff, which I'm not, like I'm interested in history, but I'm not interested enough where I like go back and read, you know, the, I don't know, the various David Halberstam books on it or whatever. My experience with the Vietnam War is mostly through like movies about the Vietnam War.
Sure, yeah.
Which doesn't give you always a totally, you know, like I watched this documentary called Good Morning Vietnam about a
is that about the DJ
who overcame the
Seen that doc. It's good. Well, I mean, I think I read the – I think it's based on a book by – what's that Atlantic writer's name? I can't think of it. But he did a really big deep dive on this disc jockey, and then they turned it into a documentary, I think. Yeah, it was Cy Hirsch. That's who it was.
It was a Cy Hirsch piece. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cy Hirsch is problematic. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, that. I know. But still, though, you can't just discredit all of his earlier works.
But, yeah, so I don't really know – I don't know a ton about the Vietnam War – except for what, like, just things I've heard floating around mostly in pop culture. And so to watch that Ken Burns thing, it's definitely not the, it's not the be all end all of it, but I thought it was really, really well done. And something I think that they really tried to do, and again, I don't know if they did a perfect job with it, but they really, I think, tried to also represent the experience of the Vietnamese involved in the war, which was something I had zero understanding about. And by the way, if you do watch that and you're interested in it, there's a podcast by a friend of mine, Ton Tan, that KUOW put out about her experience as a Vietnamese American. She actually interviews Ken Burns and his fellow filmmaker about the Vietnam documentary they did. So I definitely highly recommend that.
You know what? I knew that. I must have known this came up because I remember somebody telling me about that, because that was supposed to be a really good episode, too. Was she pushing back on him a little bit, or did that kind of get some buzz because she was kind of challenging Ken Burns, pushing him out of his comfort zone a little bit? No?
I don't remember the interview being caustic. The podcast is called Second Wave, by the way. I don't remember it being caustic.
Yeah, I'm probably. But just
I remember.
Shit up.
I think Ton asked some real questions, which I think were, you know, obviously legit real questions. And so that Ken Burns thing is well worth checking out. I don't know, man. I swear, if I didn't have to work or do anything, I think I could spend the rest of my life watching documentaries.
Would you want to make documentaries? I know that you made one once. Does that have – no, for real, having that experience. Like, I worked – like, talk about – I mean, on a very, 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 very amateur level, I worked with a guy who was – we made a bunch of movies together when I first came to Seattle, and he developed a whole crew of us people. I was a sound guy, started entering all these, like, 24-hour film – you know, filmmaking projects. Then there's like 36-hour ones. We did a 48-hour one, plus some other projects, just scripts that he wrote. And he would work on these scripts for like months, not for the contests, but for the other ones. He took it very, very seriously. And when I was first here in town, I didn't have anything to root me. Like, I didn't have a regular job. I was trying to freelance. It seemed good to do stuff like this. But I got to say, when I look back at those days, and peace and love to my friend June and all those people who I miss, some of the folks I worked with, I do not miss that at all. I think about you know, our buddy Celine, prom queen, and she's also like a filmmaker, and she's often posting things that are either maybe quick behind the scenes things, or she'll post that, oh, I'm working on a you know, a music video for this, and she's so talented at that shit, and I watch it, I'm amazed. But then I think about all of the work that goes into it, like all of the work that goes into 30 seconds of a produced piece of video, whether it's a movie or a music video. I'm just like, God bless you for making it, but that's not the life for me. I'm too lazy.
Right. Well, those are two different things, too, I think. Like making a video like Celine does, that's its own level of pressure, because you got to get everything right, and there's all these marks people are trying to hit, and you're probably going back in and doing post. The documentary is different because the pressure there is to be rolling when something's happening, to make sure that you're just there documenting. And so you end up documenting tons and tons of stuff that isn't very interesting to make sure you're there for the moment that is interesting. Like, yeah, I made one documentary. And looking back on it, I mean, what I'd really like to do with that one it was for new listeners. It was about this family band called the Trachtenberg Family Slideshow Players. What I wish I could do is go back and take that whole hour plus that was the final cut and make it like the first 15 minutes of a new documentary where I then catch up with them. Because I would do a lot of stuff differently because I just – it's so much work. And I'm not saying it's more work than making something that's really produced and slick. But, man, it's just so time-consuming. I think I like watching really good documentaries that other people have made more than making them on my own. It's just a – I mean, that's the thing. It is all filmmaking, if it's of a high quality, is time-consuming for one reason or another. But the – like I was talking to the guys who made that the Netflix series Wild, Wild Country. And they were saying that, which is about the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh and Rajneesh Puram in Antelope, Oregon. And they found out about that documentary. They found out about this. They're from California. They're like, you know, Kurt Russell is their uncle. And it's weird because one of them is a dead ringer for Kurt Russell.
Ooh, don't tell Leaves.
And they're just the nicest. Chapman and McLean Way is their names. We had them on Livewire. And they're just like the nicest dudes. I really like them. But one of them is legit, you're talking to Kurt Russell at age like 23.
Wow.
It's just like, it's, and you don't want to say anything because like he's like heard it before. So like I think their mom is Kurt Russell's sister or something. But anyway, they were up in Portland at the like the Portland, they were at basically an archive. I think the state of Oregon archive or something. And some person whose just job is to hang around down in like the stacks says, oh, yeah, by the way, did you know that there was this thing? It was called the like Rajneesh Puram. It was this city that got constructed for this cult. And they kind of tried to take over a neighboring town. And they poisoned 750 people at this salad bar. And they were like, what? And they didn't even know. So then what they did was they got all of the footage. And part of why that Wild Wild Country has so much cool footage is because – sorry, I'm just being boring here. But is I hadn't thought of this angle till these guys told me about it – is because that – whole event happened right when digital tape started happening. So these news anchors and these reporters would shoot hours of stuff because it was cheap. You know, had it been 10 years earlier, they would have been shooting on film and it would have been way less leftover tape. But this was all being documented like crazy because videotape was relatively cheap. So they then just set about with one of their, I forget which one's wife, was like the two guys, the two brothers, and then one of their wives just watched like thousands of hours of this old footage of what had gone down there. And that's how the movie started. And I would love to be them touring the country, celebrating this amazing documentary they made, documentary series. But I do not have the determination to be one of the people logging through the thousands of hours of tape looking for something usable.
You'd rather be at the after party.
I'm more of an after. I see myself, Andrew, as more of an after party
sure.
guy.
Yeah. Well, that could be the name of the documentary about you, After Party Guy. Mm-hmm. And I can make it. Sure. And it's just about you, kind of swooping in at the last minute and kind of involving yourself with a bunch of people, not just filmmakers, but all kinds of like kind of creative types. And then you're there for like the kind of the rap parties and the after parties and stuff like that.
I sort of like to just swoop in for the hoopla.
Mm-hmm. I cannot believe he just told that joke.
By the way, if we don't get to the top story soon, I'm going to be After the River guy. So
yeah,
let's do that.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I'm sure that there are real news story or real news shows and probably NPR and other people that will actually be talking about this story. So I don't know why this is like more newsy than we usually get, but I just thought it was interesting today. I kept reading more about it. Starbucks says they're going to get rid of the disposable plastic straw by 2020. 28,000 stores worldwide. They're going to use recyclable strawless lids. So the issue really is waters and like cold drinks. That's the problem because the hot drinks don't use straws anyway for obvious reasons. So they just have – I was kind of surprised when I looked at the strawless lid they've designed for cold drinks. Would you believe, Andrew, that it's just basically the same lid they use for the hot drinks? Like, it's like, yeah, we're just going to put that lid on the cold drinks and then you'll just drink it out of that.
So there's you know what? I'm sorry. You said strawless and strapless a million times.
Yes.
Yet I kept thinking, oh, they're going to use biodegradable straws, which I know that is not the case because you even put the note in the show sheet. Why don't they use biodegradable straws? For some reason, I was having trouble getting my head around that because, I mean, I know that this is like something that's going on certainly here in Seattle because of a law that was passed actually a long time ago. ago. People think it's a new law, but it was a law that was passed a long time ago that had to do with plastic bag usage and a bunch of other things. And these regulations have been rolling in over time, and it's this newest regulation is clicking in now, or kicking in, and that is that Seattle, you know, restaurants have to have either no straws or biodegradable straws, I believe. And they're encouraging people. This is how we got Mark Harbinger. Remember, you know, my favorite, there's a Seattle Mariner named Mitch Haniger, and, you know, they tried
to... We love you, Mitch Haniger.
Genevieve will love that.
Just a joke for Durs.
Genevieve considers...
Try to think of the...
Genevieve considers herself the meme master of the fun-loving criminals, by the way. Like, she takes her role very seriously.
And by the way, she is. No disagreement.
All right, now I just feel like I got to explain it. So Mitch Haniger is a guy in the Seattle Mariners. When he does something good, Genevieve started yelling, "We love you, Miss Mitch Haniger," which I didn't get, but it's from Annie. "We love you, Miss Hannigan," I think maybe is the original reference. So then
yes.
She made a meme
in the movie version, played by Carol Burnett, I believe. She makes the orphans say, "We love you, Miss Hannigan."
Miss Hannigan. And so then Genevieve made a meme that says, "We love you, Mitch Haniger," with a picture of Carol Burnett, you know, as Miss Hannigan. And
well, we have
and
to give the backstory, always... though, of when it particularly jumped off. We had all met at Teddy's to watch the Mariners.
It was already a thing,
Luke.
I'm telling you.
No, I know this. Oh, okay. I understand that. But listen, I'm adding value to the story here. Okay? Listen. You don't get to be after party guy if you don't know how to add value to the story. This is my whole move. No. So you and Genevieve brought up the fact that Genevieve was trying to get this "We love you, Mitch Haniger" thing off the ground. And at this time, my memory was that she was not getting a lot of traction with it with you because you were unfamiliar with the Annie thing. So this is the conversation we were all having at Teddy's. Then we get to the top of the eighth inning when Mitch Haniger is up and it's do or die. The Mariners, I believe, are down at this point. And I said, if Mitch Haniger hits a home run here, I will officially embrace "We love you, Mitch Haniger" as a thing. And would you believe he hit this dramatic home run? And we all freaked the fork out and the Mariners ended up winning. And this is not me trying to take credit in any way for it. What I'm trying to say was of all the days for you guys to bring this up, it was the day that Mitch Haniger, in fact, delivered an amazing, magical moment late in the game. And so for our friend group, most of whom was there, for our fun-loving criminals, it totally, I'm just saying, Vives launched this at exactly the right moment.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, no, I mean, the winds were definitely in her favor. The reason I bring all of this up, though, this is a huge aside, is also I used to like to call him Mark Harbinger because back to the straw thing, there was this nonprofit group that wanted to, and you'll see this a lot with these kind of things, they wanted to kind of go viral or make it fun. Not using straws is fun. So they got three different people. Somebody from the Seattle Storm, the WNBA team, somebody from the Mariners, I can't remember who the third person was, probably somebody from the Sounders. And somehow they got them involved and got to use their likeness and maybe a quote from them about not using straws or something. I don't know. They try to turn it into some sort of a game. And they have a picture of Mitch Haniger and it just says Mark Harbinger underneath it. Like, you just couldn't get it more wrong.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
And I think it was this
guy.
That
is the most... That is like confirming every suspicion about namby-pamby,
right?
Snowflake, do-gooder liberals, trying to latch on to this sport culture but getting it totally wrong because they don't really know sports. I'm not saying that's the case, but it definitely reinforces that notion.
Yes. I mean, that is my favorite thing. I mean, I'm almost bummed that "We love you, Mitch Haniger" has kind of overshadowed that. And it wasn't me who pointed out. I think... if I'm giving credit here, it's that guy. Do you follow him, Joe Vieira? He's like a local guy, follows the Mariners. I'm probably butchering his last name, but I follow him, and he gets pretty active.
His last name is Harbinger.
That's right. It's pronounced Worcester, actually.
But
anyway,
you know what?
He made
the next level will be, I don't know if Genevieve will feel like you're stealing her meme, but really the natural next phase for the meme is, "We love you, Mark Harbinger."
Which sometimes I will certainly sing, absolutely. I mean, usually in the privacy of my own home. but anyway, yeah, so straws, back to straws. So that's how Mark Harbinger came around, and I knew it was happening, but for some reason you kept saying strawless coffee
strapless.
Shops here, strapless, strawless, whatever, and yet I was still picturing straws. I guess we're just supposed to bring our own.
Yes, you can BYOS, you can bring your own straw. They are going to have some compostable straws Like, you've ever been to Taco Time in Seattle, they have those compostable straws that, I have to be honest, they're not great, but they are effective for a single use. And that's the whole issue, of course, is single-use plastics are just are a terrible, terrible idea. And as much as I love the robust quality of a McDonald's straw or a Starbucks straw, I can also put up with a less great straw because I'm just using it while I'm drinking this soda. And then, you know, like... And then I'll just throw it away. Like, if it's not going to end up in the stomach of a whale, it's worth it for my experience with that straw for 45 seconds to be slightly less good. But what Starbucks is saying is they're not going to really make straws available. If you have some kind of, like, again, if you need a straw because of some sort of disability, they will provide you one, a compostable straw or a paper straw, which is another great idea. We have paper straws here because they're, like, stylish. Carrie has these, you know, party straws that we put out if we're having like a barbecue, and they're made of paper and they work fine. But what I thought was funny was part of the whole thing Starbucks has been working on apparently for some time is kind of cracking the code on a lid, a strawless lid for their cold drinks, because half of their business is Frappuccinos now.
Yeah.
Because people, peace and love, but people kind of think like, oh, it's a coffee. No, it's a milkshake. That's fine. Have a milkshake, but just know you're having a milkshake. This is not, you're not starting your day with a cup of coffee. You're starting your day with a milkshake. So that's a big part of their business. And so I was very excited to see what their solution to the strawless cold drink top was. And it's just the thing from the hot drinks. Maybe there's like – maybe the part where you put your mouth is raised up 5% more. But it's just exactly the same thing.
Like a sippy cup, it sounds like. Like slightly more sippy cuppy?
Yes. That is exactly how I would describe it. So that's what they're doing.
Genevieve, can I just mention that Genevieve bought some family reusable straws. I think we've talked about this on the show, right? Because the big thing is
probably
like the cleanliness thing. And the straws she bought, so she bought two metal straws for herself and four like kind of big fat rubber straws that would be maybe more reminiscent of those big wide McDonald's ones. And they do come with like straw washers, little tiny brushes, so that appealed to me. But I haven't really, I haven't really used one yet. I don't. Well, go ahead. You were going to say something. I don't know how much this would affect me. It feels like not that much, except the first time I'm at a movie theater and they say there are no straws. Like, you know, that would hit me. That would hit me where it hurts.
Yeah, bringing your own straw as of right now feels super weird to me. But it might just be because straws are everywhere, and once this becomes the norm. And this is one of those moments where I think, you know, not unlike hotels saying, like, we're eco-friendly, therefore we aren't going to wash your towels. I think this is one of those moments where the business interests and the environmental interests actually intersect. Because how much money is Starbucks spending on straws every year, and how much money is Wendy's spending on straws? So, like, this is actually – I think you're going to see this widely adopted, because once it's normalized – once people are used to it, and then companies can cut a few million dollars off their yearly budget on straws, they're going to be like, right on. But they're going to, of course, frame it as like we're embracing an environmentally sensitive policy here. So right now it seems crazy to me to bring a straw around, but talk to me in 5 years. Maybe that'll be the thing. Maybe we'll all just have reusable straws that we keep in a little reusable straw sleeve, and they just like chill in our backpack or whatever, our glove compartment, and it's just kind of a given. You know, I was wondering why, because like what Taco Time has done is apparently everything. I keep bringing up Taco Time, A, because I love them, and B, because weirdly they've kind of gotten ahead of the curve on this. All of their stuff, every piece of paper, of straw, of cup, everything that you get when you get like to go Taco Time stuff is compostable. And the reason that's a good plan is because then you throw everything into the compost. Because the problem with compostable straws, and I only found this out today, and the reason why Starbucks doesn't just roll out compostable straws is because if you don't throw a compostable straw into the compostable receptacle, it doesn't do any good. The compostable straw is not going to break down if it's in the trash. It will compost if it's in a compost pile, basically. So what you need to do, I guess, it seems like the real answer is make everything compostable. And that's kind of where I feel like the future of all of this is. Because I'm not trying to do like a really hacky bit, but no joke, when I sit there and look at the bins, compostable, trash, recyclable, even when they have pictures, I am genuinely confused every time. And I'm not trying to do a stand-up bit. I am legitimately confused. What would be great is if I would be more than happy for the cups, even though I complained about the spoons from Grand Central Bakery near Cairo, which would almost liquefy when you'd put them in hot liquid, which is, you know, for a spoon, kind of its main job when you're trying to use it to have soup. Even with those complaints being registered, I would rather everything was compostable and then there's one place you throw everything. That would be fine with me, even if the stuff was like a little bit less easy to use.
Yeah, like eating more and more of my diet is, and checkbook is based on the Whole Foods across the street from me and not buying groceries so much as like taking advantage of their hot bar there. And they definitely have one of those systems where, you know, they have the three different bins and they have the pictures. And I do have to stand there for a second and figure it out, but I don't have anywhere to be. I'm a podcaster, so I'm fine with that.
But for me, I don't actually get the stuff in the right thing. It's not even that I feel like it's wasting my time. It's that I don't feel like I'm actually nailing it at the end because I don't know. First of all, there is pressure if someone's standing behind you. Second of all, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm just saying, like, for me, it's that I honestly worry that I'm throwing stuff in the wrong thing because I'm not able to really understand the differences, which is on me.
Yeah, and with the pictures they have, though, you know, there's nothing I'm ever getting at that place that doesn't have, like, it's represented in the picture. I mean, I definitely dig what you're saying. I'm not arguing that. But it is – you're seeing more and more of it being compostable. I mean, I'm just reiterating what you're saying. But, like, there was a time when maybe plates would be garbage and napkins and the food scraps would just be compostable. But now you can make the plates pretty easily compostable. And I'm quite sure even the plastic or plastic-ish forks and spoons that I use are also compostable now too. And I like that. I'm with you. I mean, I think that you can – this is a little bit reminiscent of what we were talking about I think I cut this whole part out of the show, so people never heard it. But we talked a lot about veggie dogs and trying to make a veggie dog taste like a hot dog. You and I did a little – again, this didn't make the show in our hot dog show, but we did a little taste testing of some veggie dogs. And, you know, they were fine in their own way. We tried a couple of different kinds, but none of them would have surprised me. Like, none of them could have passed as a hot dog to me, which really I found surprising because that is a product, a meat product that is could not be more processed, you know, and like you're basically eating something that's just like mashed up into a paste and put into some sort of a skin. And, you know, it just seems like that would be so easy to recreate using soybeans or something since it's so – or some other kind of fake protein or real protein. But they still didn't quite get it. But I feel like hot dogs are going to move in this direction and compostables are going to move in the direction where eventually compostable straws are just not going to be that big of a deal. Like I know people who are like really bent out of shape about this. They work at Cairo, no surprise. But like they insist that the that the compostable straws just aren't good enough. But, like, I understand a spoon that melts in your soup, but a compostable straw for the length of a soda, is that really that problematic?
Yeah. Listen, nobody prizes their personal comfort in any one moment like me. I will put my need to have everything the way I want it to be up against anybody's. And yet, even I am like, who cares? Like, it's fine. It's a straw. We'll get through it together. It'll, you know what I mean? Like it's 4 minutes of my life. It's so worth the trade. And again, I say this as a person who's very persnickety. So that to me is just a tempest in a teapot trying to act like it's not up to the standards of slurping down your diet soda or whatever. So yeah, I think this is overall a good thing. And I think that I hadn't thought about that, but until we talked about it, but I do think it'll be interesting to check back in 10 years on this as far as like, because remember, bringing your own – I still don't do it, but bringing your own bag to the grocery store would have been weird at some point. Really? Now it's very much the norm.
Certain
people.
Yeah, I mean that's what's funny, and I feel like I'm sorry if I'm a broken record because I know I've said this a lot. Maybe I've said it more on the Cairo side because we talk about this stuff more there. But the Cairo side, that's what I consider. TBTL is just one part of a two-sided coin.
Sure.
I go back to visit my parents in Cleveland, and you're checking out, and they just they put all your groceries in plastic bags, double plastic bags. This is how I grew up, getting groceries in double plastic bags. Like, you just don't think about it. And then, you know, you move here, the laws change, and, you know, you can buy paper bags for a nickel a piece if you want, or you bring your own. For the most part, I bring my own. And it's just, I don't think about it. I know there's a time that if you could rewind the clock, and I'm like a much younger person living in Cleveland and saying, laws are going to come, we're going to bring your own bags, I'd be like, what the hell? That would anger me so much. And now it's just like, no, it's no thing at all. You go back home to Cleveland, you feel like a criminal when they hand you, like, they give you like 10 bags, 10 plastic bags, and all
can
you
I
bought
put
was
each
a loaf
tomato
of bread.
In its own plastic yeah. bag for you, sir?
Like, how did this happen? And you actually feel guilty leaving the store. You just get used to these things, and it is not a quality of life issue at all. It's like, honestly, it's a quality of life issue if we don't make these steps, not to get all Al Gore-y on it. Al Gore-y. That would be a good you know that there's a, what do you call it, a roller derby person named Al Gore-y, right? Like, there's got to be.
Yeah, of course. It's very edgy. It's very in your face.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right.
Is this the part where I just sing, or what's the plan here?
This is.
Let me ask you a question, Luke. I should have asked you this before the show. I like doing the Blur's Day shout-outs. A lot of people are apparently born in the summertime, or this segment is just taking off. Blur's Day shout-outs we usually do on Thursday, or Blur's Day, that's tomorrow. But I have so many here for this week. Do you think I should split it into two, or do you think tomorrow is just like all Blur's Day all the time?
A Blur's Day blowout? A real
my God!
Blur's Day blowout?
I think you answered the question. I think we should just do a Blur's Day blowout tomorrow. Huh.
Can I tell you about something that just happened that I'm very proud of? This is such a small thing. But so I told you I was sneaking a little jogging before the show. But what happens then is I'm very hot and very sweaty, even post-showering. And so I usually will be using iPhone or iPod earbuds to talk to you. Because they're not like a big thing that's covering my ear like an earmuff that's, you know, just making me more hot and more sweaty and filling up with water. But they're on a short leash. Those things are very short. The bigger, more cumbersome headphones, they have a longer leash on them. And so Rudy and I have been chilling in here doing the show, and now I believe Carrie is home. And so when Carrie comes home, Rudy stands at attention. She's very wants to get out of this room. So while we were talking, I just like subtly slipped the larger headphones, clicked those into the headphone amp, switched over to the longer headphones. Now I'm going to be able to, while you're talking, just slip away, open the door for the dog, and if you were to say anything to me there or just continue singing the email theme song, I would have heard the whole thing.
Oh, because you put them on over and then pulled the earbuds out from underneath.
Yes.
Right, that thing where sometimes women will take off their bra without taking off their shirt, and it seems like a magic trick, right?
Right, sort of an old strapless move.
Right. It's called strawless now, actually. okay, so we're going to save the Blur's Days for a Blur's Day blowout tomorrow. I love that. Yeah. Don't forget that branding. We need more branding.
Okay.
Speaking
we need
of
more benchmarks, and we need to sweep the quarter hour.
Speaking of headphones, by the way, this is, I think, an interesting email, but also kind of weird, if you don't mind me saying, listener Samir. So listener Samir sent us this. You were talking about those Airbud are they called Airbud? Airbud-esque
AirPod?
AirPod, I'm sorry. Airbud was a movie featuring a dog that plays basketball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
You were talking about the AirPods, these generic AirPods you could get, wireless Bluetooth earbuds that you could put in your ear but not spend like $120 on via Apple. They were supposed to be replacements, and you were saying that they came, they're like $18 a pop on sale, and they were so huge you couldn't fit them into your ear, literally into your ear holes. Samir says, my company is responsible for sourcing quote-unquote great products and distributing them through our variety of white-labeled publisher shops. I assume that that is something like the Deal Spin part of Deadspin where you got yours, white-labeled publisher
shops. Yeah, it's back
shops.
Up there, by the way, right now. I just saw the other day. I mean, I saw it yesterday, the link.
Well, Samir says so that his company is does that, and we recently started selling some headphones, quote, bringing you the convenience of Apple's AirPods minus the sucker punch to your checking account, end quote. As with most products we distribute, we created sales, content, and buzz, and to no surprise, they started selling like Apple AirPods marked at $18 would. Once we got the product in-house, we were shocked. I mean, these headphones weren't made for your average ear holes. I truly appreciate you getting to the top story and the big headphones reveal, as my company is kind of responsible for bringing them literally into Luke's ears. That's a that's great crazy. Email, but isn't that like, yeah. I don't know why I thought it was weird, but it's kind of like, yeah, well, that's me. I did that.
I'm glad that... you know what I say? Tip of the cap, Samir. Like, well played to Samir's company. You tricked me. You got my $18 times two, and I feel like that's on me.
Yeah.
I should have known that there's no free lunch, and I should have probably, at the very least, only bought one. So for some reason, I don't resent Samir's company. I'm kind of like, hey, well played.
Yeah.
But it's funny that they know they're way too big for people's ears.
It sounds like I guess that's the point of his thing, is that they don't try everything out before signing on to it. So it sounds like they kind of did all of the marketing and sales and all of the stuff, and then they're like, oh, yeah, these are for giants. interesting email. Thank you for sending that in, Samir. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. God, I'm still out the money, but I feel so validated that I'm not the only one. Like, I don't suffer from small ear holes or something. That,
right.
Like, this is a known issue.
There comes old tiny ears. All right. I have one more for you. And I want to tell you, Luke, just brace yourself a little bit. I don't think you're going to love this. Somebody has a question about this show and this show's lore, kind of recent lore. They want something cleared up. It's not something that you sign off on, but it is something that has taken on a life of their own. And it is regarding TBTL Daddies. At one point on the show, I mentioned that the person who, I think we were joking about it. I said, what if we started calling the people who introduced you to this podcast your TBTL daddy? I think it was during a dazzling donor, or a daddling donor, as I will now call it. And so during Blur's Day segments especially, somebody will say, you know, shout out to so-and-so. It's their birthday, and they're my TBTL daddy. They introduced me to the show 2 years ago or what have you. Well, our friend Christy Wise wrote in. Now, she sent this to my email directly, so I don't know if she wanted this for air or not, but I hope so. She says, I have some questions about TBTL Daddies. Many of the tens began listening after listening to Luke on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So does that make Peter Sagal their daddy, or is it Luke himself? And lastly, is daddy a gender-neutral term? In other words, am I Jeremy's TBTL daddy, or am I Jeremy's TBTL mommy? Thanks for clearing this up. Christy.
This is your whole thing. So I'm gonna leave all of
you're not,
I'm gonna leave these answers to you, the one who knows.
You're like Pontius Pilate washing your hands of this?
I am. I'm literally washing my hands right now.
I think Dandy is gender neutral. Did I say Dandy?
Daddy.
Daddy. Did I say Dandy?
You said Dandy, but I think Dandy can also potentially, I mean, not historically, but we could just start making Dandy gender neutral as well.
Who's your TBTL Dandy?
And what does he do?
I don't know. I'm open to interpretations on this. In fact, I wish Christy would just have given me a ruling and then told me. But I would say Daddy, because the way people have been using it, Daddy seems to be gender neutral. So I think
what would the downside of it being gender neutral?
Yeah, I don't know, like Daddy or Mommy. Like, I think Daddy is fine. I don't know if that's exclusive. I think it's good. And then I don't know, I think Pete, yeah, let's say if you heard about the show from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, then Peter Sagal is your TBTL daddy. And that means Peter Sagal has so many
TBTL children all around this country. And
yeah, he's going to owe a lot of child support.
He's going to owe a lot. Yeah. So, well, congratulations.
I'm just glad that you were able to basically clarify what was going on with this. You know, what was essentially up, you know, with this.
What's up?
You get one, I get one.
What, do we stop reading listener emails? I made one, like, you really, I was going hard on you on Pancake Daddy on one show because that, but that was a totally separate thing and you didn't like it. This TBTL Daddy thing, I made one joke on one show during a Dazzling Donor segment and the listeners took it over.
I know, but you definitely spearheaded it, which is fine. I'm saying you can spearhead it. I mean, you choose which emails get read. The listeners, I cannot argue with the fact that the listeners love this. The listeners are you have roused this rabble. They are screaming, "Give us Barabbas!" And I am over here washing my hands of it and occasionally playing a "What's Up" sound drop.
Mm-hmm. Can I? Speaking of "What's Up," Genevieve suggested I somehow use this as intro tape. This is from two different parts of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I messed around with it a lot yesterday. I couldn't wrangle it into something that I felt actually worked well for intro tape. But one of the characters is like being a mentor to another one of the characters, and this is how it begins.
When people say good morning, they mean hello. When people say how are you, they mean hello. When people say what's up, they mean I am a person not worth talking to.
It goes on from there. But every time you say what's up, I think about that.
Neil, I was watching that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee I mentioned the other day. And Neil Brennan is a comedian who's the co-creator of Chappelle's Show. And he has this Netflix special out called Three Mics. He hosts a show called The Champs with Moshe Kasher. He's a very smart guy. I've had one interaction with him, which is so not on him. I met him in a hotel lobby once where he was kicking it with someone who had just been on Livewire. We had a comedian on. I forget who it was. And then back at the hotel, Neil Brennan must have been performing in Portland. And I felt like he was kind of big-dogging me, but also it was 11 o'clock at night, and who knows. I'm not going to let that affect my opinion of Neil Brennan. But he was talking on Comedians in Cars with Coffee about how the thing he doesn't like about Hollywood culture right now, I mean, among other things, is that there's this new thing where people just walk up to you, and instead of saying, how are you doing, they go, you good? And then they just move on. And, like, you good is a way of not really engaging in finding out if someone – how someone's doing. It's, like, if you're busy and you don't really want to get into it at all, because now this person has to, like – it's a lot to say, no, I'm not good.
Yeah.
Like, you've kind of really locked them into a place where they're not going to take up any more of your time. You could go through a whole sea of people being like, you good? Cool. You good? Cool. You good? And you just like – it's just a way of not really actually checking in on other people. I thought that was interesting.
I find myself – what did I do recently? I can't think of the exact example, but something like instead of saying, hey, are you going to eat that? Which is already rude, and I would never do that. But instead of saying, are you going to eat that? Saying, you're not going to eat that, are you? You know, it's like fast forwarding through it. It's like putting an assumption on somebody so that if they want to protest, you're right. They have to jump through an extra hoop of protest.
Right. That's right next to saying, you're done with that, right, nerd?
Is that something specific?
I just mean it's like you're kind of, that's like a thing that somebody, you know, the bully would say to Marty McFly in Back to the Future. Like, you're done with that, aren't you, nerd?
Yeah.
Like, you done with that? It's like, you're right. It's sort of seizing control of the interaction.
It's seizing control of the narrative is really what is happening here.
It really is, Andrew. Anything else?
No, that's all I got for emails and V-mails today. Just remember the phone number is 206-414-8285. I don't know if those promos are still running. So if they're not, 206-414-TBTL is the number to call.
We would love to get some V-mails, love to get some more emails to refill. I think we're starting to kind of burn through some of them and get down to the nitty-gritty. Yesterday you were reading Facebook posts, so.
Yeah.
So although that I have to say the email about from the guy, what was his name again, who works at the company that sold me, essentially provided the two
Samir.
Large earphones.
Samir.
Samir's email was worth 10 emails.
Oh, my God.
Because of its extreme relevance.
Yes. And also Harmony's Facebook post yesterday about that her run-in with that guy at the GNC who would take no for an answer when trying to get her phone number.
Oh, that was also 10 emails.
Oh, God.
That was That was an amazing email. Anytime someone has something that's a direct experience with something that we're talking about literally that week of shows, that's a very nutritionally rich email for us.
Yeah, it is.
Because we eat the emails later. They're pretty low carb, actually. You'd be surprised. I ordered them from Quest.
I like to slurp them up with a big straw. Big reusable straw.
A few show titles.
Good.
Shin Deep in the Hoopla.
Okay.
Which was mine, so it's kind of a little self congratulatory. Old Tiny Ears, which mm-hmm. is what you described me. And Who's Your Dandy and What Does He Do?
I do kind of like that.
All right, do that one.
Well, I feel like Shin Deep in the Hoopla really – I feel like that describes the show today and also is a big theme early on. Let's do that.
All right.
Let's do that. All right, and then – but
we could go out with another
– we could go out with Jim Dandy. We don't have
What's
to do
Jim
that.
What's Jim Dandy?
That's an old song that I think I mostly know from the Dazed and Confused soundtrack. But that's okay.
It's not racist? Because I hear an Ooh. Old song named Jim Dandy, and I'm like, yeah, probably racist.
I don't think so. Is this the right one? I certainly hope not. Is this it? I don't think this is the... Nope, not using that version. I don't know. That's not the version that's on the soundtrack.
Is it
but
Black Oak of Arkansas? Is that who you're looking for?
I don't
Black
know.
Black Oak, Arkansas?
I can't remember. I had the soundtrack. This one, this and Pulp Fiction were probably the soundtracks I listened to most in, like most in my life. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people in my generation. Like these were
I'm going to tell you a little history on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song written by Lincoln Chase. It was first recorded by Laverne Baker in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
The song is about Jim Dandy, who rescues women from improbable or impossible predicaments. Is this the same song?
I don't remember the lyrics that well.
Black Oak, Arkansas covered it.
Hmm.
It was number 25 on the pop charts.
Yep, and that's...
Eventually, in 1973, it was from their album High on the Hog. Now, here's the question. Do we want to hear the Laverne Baker version, or do we want to hear the Black Oak, Arkansas? You probably want to go Black Oak, Arkansas, because that's the one you know.
Well... It's safer because I do know it, but I'm actually more interested. Whatever I played a second ago was atrocious. I don't know what that was, but that was the Hit Company popcorn buckets. I don't know what the heck of that version of Jim Dandy was. But oh god, that irritated me. But let's go with the what's her name, Laverne? What?
It's Laverne Baker, and I don't know if that's a man or a woman.
We should. It's a woman. We should play this one because it's not going to be bad, right?
It's fine. Of course not. This is like the thing, right?
So good. You love it already.
Yeah. This is like Hound Dog, Big Mama Thornton.
Sure.
Like that was she did Hound Dog before Elvis did. This was a whole thing, right? So here we go. Jim Dandy is how we'll go out. Who's your dandy and what does he do?
Maybe we, yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Mariners. Go eat a bagel. Go Croatia. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. Spider lady, hold on.
Power out.